Guys, ready?
Should we hold it?
You hold it like this. Welcome to Talking Too Loud, the show with the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. And today I'm sitting here with Phil Agnew, the host of The Nudge, the UK's number one marketing podcast. No big deal. So,
no big deal.
Phil, hey, good Chris. To see you. How
Thank
are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm brilliant. I've got my favorite mic I've ever recorded with in my life right here. I can't wait to chat.
Awesome. So we're going to dive into some insights from your show.
Yep.
But first, I have to ask you the question. What has you talking too loud?
What has me talking too loud? I get frustrated with marketers who simplify their work, who make their work seem too easy. This is really common.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If you go around today, everyone will be saying, here's the three steps that you need to do to become a better marketer.
Yeah.
Here's the silver bullet.
Yeah.
What I don't like about this is it goes against psychology. So there is endless evidence that showcases the more effort and work you put into something, the more people value it.
Yeah.
So Ryan Buell, a Harvard professor who did studies right here in Boston, did this incredible study in a restaurant where people could see the chefs making the meal in some of the variants and then not see the chefs cooking the meal in another variant.
Yeah.
Do you know what happens when you can see the chef cooking your meal?
You value it more.
You value it more.
Yeah.
But here's what's really interesting, Chris.
Yeah.
The chefs cook a better meal as well.
Yeah.
So when you showcase the work that you do, when you put into something, your audience values that work more.
Yeah.
You create better work as well.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
That's awesome. And I mean, I really resonates with me. I get very frustrated when people talk about just like hacks.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is this one short-term hack, or you do this one hack and it like worked really well for us. And it's like, so many people chase them. They chase the hack. And then guess what? It doesn't work. And it's like, but if you take the long road, it basically always does.
Yeah.
But to your point, the psychology of it is rough because you think you're going to do something. You think you're going to get a result. You don't get the result you want. Now you're down on yourself.
Yeah.
You try it again and again and again. And you think nothing works when if the whole time you just said, all right, instead of doing this for like a week or a month or a quarter, I'm going to do this at least 3 years, at least 5 years.
Yeah.
Then it's like totally different. It's like your chances of success are much higher.
And it's so easy for marketers to apply this. This is why it gets me annoyed.
Yeah.
Because marketers can do this straight away.
Yeah.
There's another study, 2003 study, which looked at presentations.
Yeah.
Two presentations. It was about electronic ink, which is the ink. It's really boring. Boring presentation.
Yeah.
It was the same presentation, showed it to two different groups of participants.
Yeah.
Some were told this took 37 minutes to prepare.
Yeah.
Some were told this took 8 hours and 37 minutes to prepare.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Exact same content. People valued the content far, far more, wanted to listen to the speaker more when they heard it took longer to create.
Yeah.
And people know Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
You watch any of Steve Jobs' keynotes.
Yeah.
He starts the keynote by saying how much time and effort Apple have spent working on the thing.
Yeah.
He'll say, if you come around here on weekends, the car park's full because we're all in working weekends for the past 2 months.
What do you think about companies that are trying to like build in public? You know what I'm talking about? Like, do you feel like this is the same thing, that like people see the work happening and so they get more invested and they value it more?
This is exactly what Ryan Buell studied.
He called
it operational transparency.
Yeah.
When you can see the work that goes into something, people value it more.
Yeah.
Similar study with real estate agents.
Yeah.
So real estate agents had real people, this is a study with real people, came to the agent, asked, can you send me some houses that I think I'll like?
Yeah.
They sent them 8 houses. Now, in reality, they'd spent all night working on finding 8 houses that were relevant for them.
Yeah.
But they told half of them, oh, I just had a computer help me do this in half an hour.
Yeah.
Told half of them the truth. It took me a load of time. When they saw it took time, not only did they value the houses more, they were more likely to make a purchase
and
get a sale. Building in public can do the same thing. You're going to get more likely to close investments, more likely to close business, because people can see the effort that goes
in. Do you think that AI works against this? Because AI, if you say like an AI did this, it's not a human, and so it seems like it's too easy.
So this is the elephant in the room here.
Yeah.
This is really the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
So I've just been listening to Canva's co-founder talk about how AI will help you create incredible designs.
Yeah.
The problem is, when people find out that the design was created by AI, they won't value that design as much.
I know.
If I had drawn something awful, Chris, and brought it here and said, I've spent weeks working on it and showed it to you, you would say, oh, Phil, that's really good.
Yeah.
If I'd shown you the same thing created by AI and told you, you wouldn't be as actually, this, I don't agree with that because my drawings are terrible. But no, in general,
I'm sure they're great. You work very hard on them. No, but it's interesting because, like, I won't name the tool, but I was playing around with an AI tool yesterday, 2 days ago, that was like a graphic design thing. Promise of this thing's amazing. Yeah. And it does text really well. So you can, like, put something in and change the text, which seems like it's delivering this AI promise that hasn't been delivered on, right?
Yeah.
So I go in there and I play around. I put some text in. I'm like, I don't like it. And I think if, like, a graphic designer had actually spent a ton of time and came with three different versions, I looked at it, I would have looked at it differently.
Yeah.
And I think this is interesting because, like, if you know it was made with AI, if there's a signal to that, I think inherently people are going to value it less.
Yeah.
If you don't know, then maybe they won't, I guess, from, like, if it's in marketing collateral.
Yeah.
And so the question is, can you use it to make things that are high enough quality that they truly seem like they have the creativity and the thought and the care and the work that a human would put into it?
That's the question. And I think probably you will be able to. Probably there will be a point. But what I imagine will happen is I think there will be legislation that's put in place which says you have to publicly declare
you think
if
that's
this
gonna
song
happen?
Is created by AI. I don't think Rihanna can have a completely AI-generated song and get away with saying she wrote it herself. I don't think...
That's interesting because I don't know if that will happen.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've been using technology for so long to aid us in creating things in Photoshop. I mean, we never saw those things on ads where it said, like, this isn't a real person.
It's true.
But we did, as a society, pick up on it and started devaluing it. So I do think that, like, whether or not there's going to be a badge there, we're going to see a trend towards doing things that are basically impossible for AI to do. And, like... Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Okay, I actually have prepared questions, and I'm going to ask one of them now. On your show, you explore the intersection of behavioral science and marketing. Can you share your top three consumer psychology tips that marketers should be embracing?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I like Robert Cialdini's 7 principles of influence.
Okay.
I think they are very powerful. There are three that probably I use all the time as a marketer.
Yeah.
Social proof. So this is the idea that we follow the actions of others.
Yeah.
Walking around this venue, if there's a talk that is full, I'm going to sit
you're
down
gonna
and
go
watch that talk
what's
because
the
I follow the actions of other people. There are really interesting ways to apply this. The most interesting one I like to talk about is for companies that don't have popularity yet.
Yeah.
How do you use social proof if you're not popular?
Yeah.
There's a fantastic study with menus in the US where they managed to increase the desire for plant-based products, which there wasn't much desire before, so they didn't have social proof. But they simply said, 30% more people are eating plant-based produce now than they were a year ago.
On the menu.
So showcase the change.
Yeah.
That was still like 2% of the people.
But that's
enough. Just by showcasing the change was an interesting way of using social proof. So I really like social proof. I like scarcity. I don't think we have to talk about that too much
because
everybody knows scarce resources are valued highly. And I really like consistency. So if you get somebody to agree to something small and then follow up, they'll be more likely to then say yes to that thing in the future. So, you know, if I messaged you on Twitter, DM'd you and said, would you listen to my podcast?
Yeah.
And you said yes and then came back in a month's time and said, have you on?
Yeah.
Or something like that. You'd be more likely to say yes. So consistency is good.
That's cool. Your podcast has become a go-to for marketers looking to understand human behavior. What's one recent episode or guest insight that really blew your mind?
It's a go-to for marketers. What? That's great. I'm glad. Can I just use that at the intro?
You're welcome to take any clip you'd like.
Awesome. And I'll just AI change your eyes. So it doesn't look like you're reading it.
So look at my eyes when you're watching this clip, okay?
What do I like? I had Dan Pink on. He told me that.
He's great.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He had done this amazing study where he interviewed over 10,000 people towards end of life about their regrets.
Oh, wow.
He said,
okay,
what do you regret about your life? It turns out people don't regret action. They don't regret doing something, calling that girl that they really fancy, taking that job, starting that business. They rarely regret action.
Yeah.
People regret inaction.
That's very,
they regret not doing something. So that's a takeaway I really like.
That's a good one. I love Dan Pink.
Yeah.
His book Drive is like incredible.
Me too. It's kind of game changing.
Yeah. It really influenced how we've built culture at Wistia, actually.
Yeah. Autonomy, mastery.
Yeah. It's kind of simple.
Yeah.
Does consumer psychology differ between B2B and B2C? And if so, how?
Yes and no. You're still talking to people. Businesses have people in them.
Yeah.
Consumers are people. So psychology and behavioral psychology is the process of understanding how people make decisions. So no. The difference would be with B2C, you can often scale really easily. You can scale your your ideas, your nudges, so to speak, because you have marketing platforms to do them. With B2B, the one-on-one stuff works a lot better. So things like reciprocity, doing somebody a favor, giving somebody a gift, and then getting something in return works really well on a B2B level. Whether you've got salespeople who are building those one-to-one relationships, doesn't work as well for B2C.
Yeah.
So I can't give a million Costco customers a personal gift from me. I can give them free samples. And do you know the first time free samples were given in an Indiana supermarket? This was way back in like the 1890s. Little free samples of cheese. This has never been done before. They sold 30 tons of cheese within one day.
Wow.
Because free samples was, it just wasn't a thing. Obviously now everybody uses them.
I mean, I wasn't expecting to learn that, but that's really incredible. 30 tons of cheese.
30 tons
that's
of
a
cheese.
Lot.
That's 7 times my weight. No, 30 tons. That's more like 70 times my weight, I hope.
I think it's twice my weight.
It's just one of me.
Wow, that is a good one. I like that. Okay, we're going to go to some wild card questions.
Cool.
What's a movie you could watch again and again?
I like Fight Club.
Fight Club, yeah.
I was thinking about it because I was at Flight Club last night.
Oh, nice.
And I thought it was Fight Club.
Before you got there.
I was sort of shadow boxing in my room. You know, Americans are wrestlers, so I was like,
say,
oh,
Americans
God,
really
you know, like,
lost
this is going to be serious.
Here. I'm going to be fighting people
getting
tonight.
Getting ready for a fight.
Well,
and then I get
there,
and there's a load of darts boards. And I'm British, so I'm like, oh, I'm comfortable now. So,
yeah, like is this fun. Just a cultural difference? Do they beat each other up over here? That's amazing. What's the best book you've read this year?
I've read a lot of good books. I liked Ritual Effect by Mike Norton, another Harvard professor.
I met him. At
he's,
some point.
He's
yeah.
a genius. Yeah. I read the updated version of Cialdini's book. I'd say the best book I read was actually a book by David Grann called The Wager. This is nothing
I
to do with business. It is a story of a British ship that gets shipwrecked in Patagonia.
Yeah.
The ship is completely broken, falls to pieces, and then they sail back as castaways. It's an amazing story. If you're a marketer, listen, because it's great storytelling
awesome.
And you can learn a
awesome.
Lot there, but
cool.
it's not a business recommendation.
Awesome. Okay, you know Date, Marry, Kill? You know that is?
Yeah, we're going to do that.
Yeah. We're going to do it with social media platforms.
Okay, phew.
Okay. So, Date, Marry, Kill.
Yeah.
Twitter, aka X, Facebook, or LinkedIn?
I feel like everyone you ask is going to give the same answer.
Well, let's just see.
I'm marrying LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Because I'm a loser. I'm a loser who doesn't want to spend time on social network, and LinkedIn is the only one that doesn't keep me hooked.
It's the most cringe, but we love it.
It's
okay,
like
keep going.
LinkedIn will cook me a great meal, tuck me up in bed. There'll be no good sex, but we'll live happily.
Yeah.
I'll date Facebook, I guess. Not for long. And
very, very short relationship.
Yeah, sorry, Twitter.
Yeah.
You're gone.
You're gone.
You're gone.
Phil, thank you so much. Thanks, this has been a delight. Where can people connect with you? I mean, obviously they can listen to the podcast, but how should they find you?
Well, hit subscribe on this podcast because it's my favorite podcast. And then when you're done, search for a podcast called Nudge, NUDGE, lovely orange logo, and then go and listen to whatever takes your fancy. That's where you can find me.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Chris. Thank you.